that right now is available for us to partner with. There are all these beautiful patterns that are opportunities and therefore responsibilities that are woofing before us, and I want to kind of animate them in all of our hearts, and we also get to animate, you know, how do we do real magic right now? So first, you know, Neptune represents how a culture tells itself its own story and the music soundtrack that brings that alive. So you can see it thematically, you know, Neptune in Leo, 1920s, the roaring 20s, Neptune in October of 1929, Neptune enters Virgo, like, whoop, tighten up, Neptune, you know. But now Neptune's in its home realm of Pisces, the realm of all beauty, all myths, all powerful symbols available to us all, old things that want to be brought alive in a fresh, hip, modern vernacular. Like we were talking about Marsilio Ficino, you know, we find ancestors, you know, by dedicating at such a time right now, the ancestors are kind of hovering around, meaning any field of dedication that's been dedicated to what we're dedicated to wants to be a partnered ally. And when we were mentioning Marsilio Ficino, we set forth on our path, and this language invites us all to think of our lives like spiritual detective novels in which every affinity is to be honored as a clue, you know, a love of a culture or a color or an animal or something. So we track that. And I was talking about Neptune, so I completely spaced out. What was I about to say? We don't know. So Neptune's in Pisces now. And so Pisces, the radical part of Pisces, you know, that's somewhere in all of our charts and psyches, is it is everything that mainstream culture has exiled, forgotten, dissed, imprisoned, undervalued, but said to be where a culture's soul or its replenishing vision lives. So the truly radical part says, oh, humans, don't be distracted by dazzling celebrity hoo-ha. Look at what's missing, what, you know, has gone wandering, what's the part of us that had to leave the court. But now in all the myths, it's like, doo-doo-doo, time to come on back to the court, you know, and to be willing to participate and be influential. So that's why Neptune does say to every heart here, it says, imagine that part of all of us that is kinned with all that has been distant, undervalued, but is of great value, is welcome, welcoming. You know, and that we speak to that in everyone, going, come on back. Again, that model that whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance. And maybe that's part of why, you know, I live in D.C. or arduous places to test that, going, no, and then pull out Harumphatut Composter and then go, yes. You know, and going, there's no one we can't speak to, really, if we're interested enough. And it does, as animators of cultural magnetizing story in partnership with nature, we really want to do that. So part of that, you know, on the Great God iPhone, I go, so 59 minutes ago, Obama to nominate Loretta Lynch as U.S. Attorney General. Well, Loretta Lynch, I was hearing about her yesterday, is this really kick-butt black woman. She would be the first black woman attorney general, and she is like a wrathful Dakini. Again, we don't want to be foible, you know, or impose on humans. We want to invite in qualities for them and for ourselves. So the wrathful Dakinis, let's say that all mythic figures are metaphoric animations of intrinsic intelligence in nature. And they are, you know, a template that we decide to animate. Come on in power and animate Kuan Yin or animate whatever. So the wrathful Dakinis are pretty great because they represent that in nature which metabolizes poison. And they were originally, Tibetan Buddhism got a hold of them and made them pretty and ornamental, but they weren't pretty. And so we're going way back before organized religion to originating impulse, you know, to connect with it and offer ourselves as agents of it coming back into the world, you know, in some way. So they weren't pretty, they were beautiful. They were depicted as part woman, part animal, part woman, part coyote, part raven, part whatever. And, you know, there's a great book by Miranda Shaw called Passionate Enlightenment. So it said that they would dance and laugh as they feast on the painful negativity that the unenlightened take to be like, whoa, 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 whoa. very important because we're going to imagine we have a cauldron here, and there are such great opportunities around. But part of it also is, what stories do we want to keep telling? Well, thank you. What stories do we want to keep telling in our own personal lives and collective lives? And what stories do we want to compost into this cauldron and coyote ladles out spirals? Because throughout human time, the purpose of ritual magic has always been for a dedicated group of humans to spiral into group collective human mind, expanded wisdom and tolerance. And so I thought, well, here we are. Why don't we do that? So I want to put some things on the table, but I do want to, you know, experimentally have it be council if there's things we want to bless. And I want to kind of proffer resources to try at home and take out and chew and customize and make your own. But the model of, we all have a magic mirror, so the secular critic part of us is necessary and holds up a mirror and goes, look, it sucks, you know, in detail is horrible. And then the trickster, with a wave of the hand, turns the mirror into a window, but look how beautiful it could be. And then with another wave of the hand, turns it into a door. Let's go. So we want all those things. We have many parts of our team who are very good at mirror going, this is terrible, and this is why Obama sucks. And this, and I always go, and your blessing would be? And they go, blessing? What is that blessing? And something that I found to be incredibly effective, I worked with Robert Bly for a long time, 12 years at his Great Mother Conference, and at one point I got him to hire Neil Douglas Klotz, who is an Aramaic scholar of sorts, but a really interesting fellow. And he said the vernacular that Jesus would have spoken was Aramaic, which is this richly metaphoric, nature-based, beautiful language. And the worst language you could translate it into was Greek, which is more kind of like, ugh. And he said, so for instance, what comes to us as blessed are the meek, used to justify, you know, class oppression and all, in Aramaic is more like, blessed are those who soften emotional rigidity within their hearts, for they shall have all the power of nature. It's like, isn't that great? I mean, you can really work with that. You know, and on the radio show I do, I have, you know, angry lesbian, separatist, anti-Christian pagans who call up and go, I'm all that, but I love this. You know, again, to step over the divisive borders and go, isn't that beautiful? You know, and Neil said also, you know, when Jesus says, be as wise as serpents and as gentle as doves, the word he uses for serpent is the same word for Eve, snake, wisdom. And I go, wait a minute. So all oppression of women and religious warfare and subjugation of the earth is a translation error? And he goes, you know, pretty much. Intentional translation error, whenever the state, you know, or whenever we outsource leadership, you know, when we abandon our own autonomy, you know, then the state, you know, or organized religion will inhale things and create toxic mimics out of them. So, yeah, so the wrathful Dakinis. But so what we did, so Neil Douglas Klotz was at the Great Mother Conference, and there were many Israeli people there and Israeli soldiers there and Palestinian poets from Texas and New York liberal Jews working for peace in the Middle East and conflict. And they all wanted to have a meeting to talk about the problems. And Neil says, I do this for a living in the Middle East. These people are not ready for this. This is a nightmare. And I go, yeah, but we got to do it, you know. But we're going to do it with the frame of the cauldron and the ladle, that for every rah-rah-rah, one, each speaker is then responsible for a medicine blessing. And it was really interesting. So somebody would go, the American people are so stupid. You know, we go, and your blessing would be? And they go, it doesn't have to be realistic. I mean, in fact, stir it up. You know, may every time people hear, watch TV and hear lies, may, you know, a council of wise wolves gallop around them and take them out to the woods, you know. I mean, or just priming the pump of our weight. So people did, you know. They'd go, oh, and the Israeli is terrible, and then I go, and your blessing would be. We were also working with the frame that we're all in this dream together. And then we enter the deeper, deeper layers of complicity. Not shame, not blame, but whatever's going on, we are We are contributing energetic directorial chi. And once we play with that idea, we can then withdraw our complicity and exhale it into a more desirable story. But it's fun to say. So in the Neptune realm, it's like I worked with this wonderful dream worker. Many ways to work with dreams, many ways to do everything. But the way she was a genius was people would tell their dream and nobody else could interpret it. No. But people would tell their dream, and then Donna would guide them to tell the dream in which every part of the dream was them. And it was really interesting, because as people would then, you would see them, you wouldn't always know what it was, but you'd see people coming to deep insight. So just on a casual level, somebody says, I dreamed I ran into an old friend, outside my house, and Donna would say, when's the last time you saw that friend? And they go, oh, like 20 years ago when I was in college. I dreamed I ran into a part of myself I hadn't spoken to in 20 years since a time I was learning, in the public part of myself. People were more resistant to tornadoes. I dreamed about the highly destructive part of myself. But it was really interesting. And so I like doing the dream news. We're all dreaming the news together. Because then we accept complicity for the whole thing. We dreamed the ignorant southern white parts of ourselves. We're burning down the black Christian church parts of ourselves. We dreamed the Israeli parts of ourselves. It just gets into an interesting realm. And since we're talking about backstage magic and many, many forms of influence, something I always use, but hardly anybody here has been tracking with me that long, so I'll use it again. But it's one of the great illustrations. It was a wonderful spiritual teacher who'd long been estranged from her adult son, they hadn't spoken in years. And one day she was just, I've had it. Send me a dream. Again, the invitational, we are designed to be brought to our knees in humility so that we finally ask, and the backstage gods go, thank God they asked. We've been waiting around for a long time. Send me a dream. So she had this dream in which she saw an octopus wrapped around her son's heart. And she woke up going, whoa. Now, she did not go into years of Jungian analysis. She, in her mind's eye, shapeshifted into a dolphin that swam up to her son with the octopus wrapped around his heart and butted gently at the octopus until in her mind's eye it let go and swam away. An hour later, in real life, her son calls up for the first time in 5 years, goes, this is so silly, let's work it out. So it's a useful experiment of backstage. We've been deprived of our efficacy by being colonized mind, which has been magic deficient mind. All indigenous people and that indigenous part of us know that we can't do anything by ourselves. It's perfect. It's by ourselves that got us into this pickle. So what I gather, where I find it heartening, and again, the evolutionary opportunity to truly partner in a magical way, magic means willingness to cooperate with everything. So first, backstage is a great place to go. It's where we put on more comfortable shoes and take off our masks, really convincing performance as a tyrannical mother. I almost believed you. Well done, fantastic, and about this election, it's my friend Pat, great political consultant before the election when we knew, we go, well, be grateful to everybody in the mystery play, because all these ugly things have existed, they were just backstage, now they're on stage. This hate-mongering, ugly hate, vituperative, war-mongering thing, we go, thank you in the mystery play for playing this ugly role. It's all there, it's it's purged, but if we begin to accept that we're all dreaming this up together, as late Reverend Ike would say, if we can dream it up, we can dream it down, which is why Neptune says, dissolution is the secret of the great work. Dissolve it first, which is why so much certainty is dissolving. Solve a coagula, dissolve it and then reanimate it. Throw it into the cauldron, give it another, template. So, So what happened with the Palestinians and the Israelis and the liberals and the everything and the contention and the hot reactivity, by the end, Neil Douglas Platt said, that was amazing. That was amazing. He said, I've never experienced anything like that because there was zero poison in the room. There was no poison in the room because everybody assumed imaginative responsibility for inviting in the antidote to what they were about. And it's a really, I just want to proffer this as a great way to play the metabolizing of poison by just creating the frame of critique and bless, discourage and encourage. You know, so I'm always, you know, on Facebook and whatnot because people are like, damn it, you know, and Obama this and Obama that. I want to say that Obama's just nominated a genius black woman as attorney general. And in the dream, we dreamed the Obama part of ourselves nominated a fierce, powerful black woman part of ourselves to be in charge of justice in America. We go, let's go. Rather than, no, we're Noam Chomsky, you know, whatever, going, it all sucks, and I know better than you, and if you believe in anything, you're all idiots, you know, and we go, that's so 19th century, you know, and it is, you know, it's muggle talk, it's got a place, you know, we want the mirror, but we go, you know, and a lot of the people, you know, I've had, you know, who are vituperative and bitter and smart, you know, whom I've posted on radio as well, Chris, whatever, Hedges, very good on mirror, could use a lot of work on window and door, you know, and so many Americans don't know what blessing is. They go, blessing, what's that? You know, may he realize he's a horrible dingbat. I go, that's not really a blessing. So fierce blessing, I also want to proffer as a fun thing to spiral out. We're allowed to set in motion as experimental magic anything of which we would be the happy recipients. That's spiritual etiquette. But in that, fierce playfulness is really useful. So when Wanda Sykes said, you know, Rush Limbaugh wants Obama to fail, I want Rush Limbaugh's kidneys to fail, we go, we understand, Wanda. But the trickster version would be, no, we want Rush Limbaugh's kidneys to work so well that they flush all the poison out of him and leave him in a pool of befuddled innocence. We go, more fun, more enticing. It's a blessing because we are friends of your soul. We are enemies of your project. You know, it's, again, the trickster redeemer in nature and in fairy tales and myth is interested in liberating everybody. It's a not counting on it, not expecting it, but willing. You know, so Coyote Network News, you know, mythological news service, so I have mythological bureau chiefs. So Scheherazade is the Middle Eastern bureau chief. And Scheherazade is the quintessential trickster redeemer. So many of you know the Arabian Nights frame story. Okay. Well, just really briefly, I mean, all stories guide us to all stories, but really briefly, the Arabian Nights is a collection of Middle Eastern stories in which most of them are about women trickster redeemers. It gets edited down, you know, but it's like Raffle Dakinis. So the frame story is man, King Shahryar, betrayed, cuckolded by his wife, will never trust women again, wife killed. So every day he marries a virgin and beds her and then kills her at dawn. So he's a sociopath. And the land is getting pretty sparse of virgins. So Scheherazade, you know, is the daughter of the Grand Wazir and so protected by privilege, but she goes, no, nope, I'm marrying him. And the Grand Wazir goes, no. And everybody goes, no. And she goes, nope, watch this. So the frame is that every night she begins a story, and it is so interesting that he cannot kill her. And it goes on for 1,001 nights, by which time he says, you have redeemed me. You know, they have children and everything, you know. You have redeemed me. And they get truly married, and she is wearing a dress embroidered with all flora and fauna of the earth. Over and over again, the king must wed the land. The king must wed the land. And women and men and all and nature granted sovereignty. You know, so she earns her sovereignty by diving into this hazardous experiment. But it's through the art of telling stories that she liberates the land, all women, and even the tyrant who has hardened his own heart. The Southern Bureau chiefs are Marie Laveau, the great voodoo queen of New Orleans, and High John the Conqueror. There's a fantastic essay by Zora Neale Hurston on High John. And High John, do you know High John? Do you know? He knows you. So Hi John is, it's a great essay. Hi John says, Hi John was not a man at first. He was a will to freedom in play and tricks. And gradually the metaphor took on weight. We are magnetizing metaphors into matter. Throughout human history, we have mythic figures founding real things. You know, Demeter Ceres, goddess of the earth, founds the Eleusinian Mysteries, a real thing. As, you know, Chiron, a mythic figure, founds the Asclepions. But so Hi John the Conqueror was not a real man, but a will, and slowly the will put on flesh with his singing drum. And he was interested in liberating all, but liberating even the tyrant and finishing everything off with a laugh. He's a genius. And it's June 23rd that's the most sacred day in New Orleans when Marie Laveau, the great voodoo queen, and Hi John the Conqueror walk the city again. And it said Hi John, like King Arthur, did not die. He goes to go live in Hi John the Conqueror route. King Arthur goes to live in Avalon to await the world's call at a time of need, when there's a need for a positive Mars masculine kindness to come into the world. And we go, now would be really good. So many stories and myths did not really end. They were put on pause, and we want to hit play. You know, so the end of the Grail legend, you know, begins with the inauthentic life. It's the use and abuse of privilege. It's the loss of connection to the land. It's the people married to people they don't love. It's, I mean, all of that. It begins that way. And then the founding of the Arthurian court was shining, radiant individuals sitting in a round table as equal participants, dedicated to protecting life. And then at the end, and it was spiritual people and wizards to come to engage in Washington, basically. And then at the end, what passes for the end of it, you know, Merlin goes away, King Arthur goes away, all the really hip people, exactly, go away. And that's why we have what we have. So in the mythic realm, you know, it's in all the, in the fairy tales, you know, the youngest child, the hero, the heroine, all of us, really, some part of all of us, must go wandering, must leave the court and go wandering, some part of us, other parts of us in a witness relocation program pretending to be whatever we are, it's our cover, but some, you know, and like Merlin, like Arthur, like Marie Laveau, like whatever, we want to, you know, call everything back, you know, calling it all back in. But is this useful?
Yes.
So maybe we want to play, critique and bless, or fierce blessing. Let me prime the pump, and people can bring up, you know, or things you might want to release, things you might want blessed, things you want, you know, if you're up for, you know, playful, language play. I like, you know, so many of our team go, we really want to make this plan concrete. I'm like, they're concrete, really? You know, how about more options? And again, the idea of training is so that we have more things. I don't think anybody this weekend has used the word empower, which is so wonderful. It's such a good fast. Because empower is a government term. You empower something else. It means power from outside. The president empowers a committee to do such and such. And it was such a bamboozling, you know, when people go, empower this, and it's like, oh, that's okay. But encourage, I just, every place people used empower, I would just put encourage, which means feed the heart. That was so encouraging. That was so, anyway. So one is, you know, the culture sucks up vitality as much as possible, but we want to stay one step ahead as the generative language realm, you know, to be fresh and unexpected in some ways, and yeah, so, and then the realm of fierce blessing. You know, in Santeria, all magic is literalized metaphor. And we do want to clean everything now, because colonialism in all its many, many sneaky forms. And let's just define it as what's going down is dominance and empire, and what's coming up is collaboration. with everything and guided by nature's ingenuity. So that's why, you know, last night when I was saying, is our manner of relating an offering or an imposition, it needs a little more context. People are like, what? But it's just useful. We can feel it. You know, it just came from a minor thing, as things do. Somebody was like, can I play you some of my music? And I go, sure. First two songs, offering. Fifth and sixth, imposition. How can I get out of here? You know, and if we have these tools, you know, we can have our tyrannometer, you know, even when somebody's talking to us, and we go, offering, imposition, you know, again, to have these tools to be able to speak the truth without a melodrama. You know, it's why I also like the literalized metaphor, you know, Saturn, our authority, is our goat. It's our goat. And wait, who was you were milking goats. You were milking the goat. That's really great. So I love goats. They are a Saturn emblem. Saturn's our own authority. So when we say somebody got our goats, you know, it comes from racehorses were given companion goats, and bad humans would steal a horse's goat before a race, leaving it all. So when somebody gets our goat, you know, but see, once we have that animated, we go, that person, you know, this community, this thing, it, you know, something got my goat, but I see it coming back even friskier and more creatively disobedient than before it got. You know, and it's another great thing in a community because everybody takes responsibility. Then my goat got, but I'm getting it back. You know, so that we can maintain calm and be agents of response. And yeah, my buddy David Grimes guided me to when Richard Wilhelm is in China translating the I Ching, there was a terrible drought. And the villagers summoned the rain, the Taoist rain shaman. And he came and he sat for like 3 days in meditation, like no, 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 no. And then it just poured and poured and poured and poured and poured. So Wilhelm said, how did you make the rain come? And the Taoist rainbringer said, oh, I didn't make it come. Where I live, things are in harmony. When I came to your community, it was so whacked out. It took me 3 days to come into balance. And when I came into balance, the rains came. So it's a collaborative accord rather than a dominating cause and effect, which is why when I like to play with all of us about going backstage to influence actual world events, we want to do it without hubris, without presumption, without deriving status, in an experimental whatever. See, because the coyote and the nature's experimental ingenuity has zero category about success-fail. I mean, other parts of us do, but, you know, experimentation is just try it, try that, no, try it. It's not try that and go, oh, it didn't work. It's like, no, try something else, try that. The other thing that kind of goes with that is the backstage realm is a realm where things can be, you know, in the metaphor resolved, like the, you know, the dolphin and the octopus, but also where we can meet with Obama or difficult brother-in-law or whatever, and you invite that person's spiritual supervisor to tea, but you really put out the tea, you know, and then you have the conversation you'd really like to have in that realm. It's very interesting experiment. It really does change molecular reality. You know, and somebody gave their brother, the head of a Jesuit monastery, an astrological reading with me as a slightly passive-aggressive gift, you know. But but anyway, so the guy came and he was, you know, first, you know, kind of, you know, but then once he realized it was this exquisite, fantastic language and we're convening the full council of him, and he really liked it. And I told him about backstage, and he goes, that is fabulous. He said, because monasteries are just rife with this petty, ridiculous intrigue, I'm just going to conduct all my, you know, business backstage in this way. And I did get to say, happy to bring a little witchcraft to the Jesuit monastery. And he was, you know, and then he would report back in going, it worked. So it goes with the one channel I really like, you know, Esther Hicks channeling Abraham, does anybody, or whatever she's doing. Anyway, but she says, you know, we can't convince anybody or argue, which means conquer or, you know, whatever. But what we can do is see people connected to their own wise autonomy. And it is such a great default setting. I mean, it, as an experiment, it is so effective. And whenever we don't do it, it's because we really want to be righteous in some form. You know, how, like when somebody does something annoying and part of us is almost hoping they do it again. So, you know,
science.
And I think I want to tease that out into the news as well, and the idea that everybody's got a role in the mystery play. So for whatever reason, on your behalf, I'm hanging out with, you know, warlords and crazy people. At one point, I'm watching Obama's State of the Union address, and somebody sits next to me, and I look around and go, "Oh my God, it's Grover Norquist." A friend of mine who got me into this, you know, transpartisan thing, I go, "Where everybody's got a role in the mystery play," and I go, "Okay, what's Grover's role?" And he says, "Well, Grover's going to bring down the military-industrial complex." And I go, "Oh, did you make a noise?"
What? Serious role.
Well, again, whatever we invite to the party, right? So I was like, because he is an insane person and toxic in many ways, but, you know, shrink government down, but he's really big on policing military waste. And I go, all right, so Grover Rover, you know, backstage, you know, drop this, you know, government thing, but, you know, go get military industrial waste. Go get that thing. Remember, in Lord of the Rings, it's Gollum's overreaching that is essential to tossing the Ring of Power into the crack of doom. So it doesn't make them moral. So when I said my friend Marcelino said all in Santeria, all ritual is literalized metaphor. So if somebody's behaving badly, you write their name on a piece of paper and you put it in an ice cube tray and you put it in the freezer to cool them out. And it's very witty. I've kind of moved on from that because it's still a little controlly, but still fun, you know. Because again, at my house, I go, no, not that ice cube tray. God knows, you know. But going, you know, if you're good, I'll put you in a drink, one day. But it is very. But then we check and we go, if I were abusing power, would I mind if somebody wrote my name? No, whatever. And I've used a couple of times to great effect. And again, just try everything for yourself. To also, with that, go, let those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. It's very effective. You know. So there's many ways to play, but always in this clean way, that lest it be not colonial, not superstition, not I'm the great hoo-ha, but as a, or whatever's better, you know. You know, really bad bully developer beating up people in our street, you know, the bully son of the developer and terrible, and a number of women, including Mrs. Payne, who was 85, we got together because we realized when we hated them, I mean, that they were provoking us. They would come and they would chainsaw flowering trees for no reason, and we were like, ah, and we realized they were feeding on it. They loved it. Remember, we strengthen whatever we oppose, and you could see them getting more, and we getting more, and we go, that's not working. We have to bless them, but not some boring nyanya blessing, you know, a fierce blessing. So with Mrs. Payne, who was 84, and a couple of other women in the neighborhood, we're like, you know, we were thinking of things going, move to North Dakota. May they move to North, no, poor North Dakota. That doesn't do it. You know, so we then said, you know, in the spirit of Scheherazade, may he fall in love with a woman who changes his heart. Not on the street, you know. And it happened. It happened. The bully developer fell in love with a woman who changed his heart. He escaped from his father's tyranny. He disappeared, and he never swaggered down our street again. Mm. And then 12 years later, he came back to build this house, and we were like, "Oh no, I would've been because we've been took him to court." But we had this great backstage conversation. He goes, "You know, well, because he started building this house that because of our constraints upon it." Started to look like this fantastic Harry Potter Hogwarts weird house. It was wonderful. So I got to say to this bully, going, we love your house. And he's like, oh, and I've done some changing in the last 12 years. You know, anyway, so again, in the dream and the Saturn realm, we would go, in case I'm hiring this part of the world to do this thing, in case I'm throwing that story into the cauldron, and we're in major story rewrite. So so part of what's, you know, where I started, you know, the desire for change wants a guiding narrative, it wants a story. So we're going way, this is a way deep inward Scorpio, true Halloween, full moon, deep time, in order to go up. So it's like the tree, you know, roots down. So we go down, so it's not like ascended masters, it's like, what a silly idea. But descending, ascending simultaneously. So part of the dynamic of now is the more we go deep, deep down, because there's huge opportunities for play and for ingenuity and for true renaissance that want to partner with us. But that's why it's really useful to clarify and dedicate, because in fairy tales, again, the wise and unwise use of magical wishes is a big, important theme. So because Jupiter and Uranus, Jupiter is stories and wealth and journey and how do we define wealth. And it is, I'll say it, you know, it's in a trine to Uranus, which is trickster ingenuity. So the two biggest path openers are coming into accord. It's as though the backstage gods are like, let's help the humans out by playing to their strong suit. Symbolism, music, stories, ingenuity, collaborative genius. We're going to make those even stronger now. So we're gathering in this deep, still place in order to go out and kind of connect. But everything's got its initiatory ordeal, because Jupiter says, Jupiter in Leo says to all Leos, create theater or live melodrama. You know, and the many, 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 again, sneaky forms of colonialism, you know, which is any condescending, finger-wagging thing, is serving empire and colonialism, no matter, it's an imposition, you know, as opposed to an invitation. And it is such a powerfully creative, fun, reverent, irreverent time where to throw everything into the cauldron, especially the holy and the sacred, and go, is it equal? Is it Mars-Venus equal? Is it equal humans and the rest of everybody on this planet? You know, is the trickster and the truth-sayer welcome? Excellent, we ladle it out again, otherwise we throw it back in. So entire traditions of... So trickster, I mean, my dedication, you know, which lives in all of us, and, you know, we all... But there's many, many ways to be. But, you know, there are many people who are grand dames, you know, and many spiritual teachers who are grand dames, and we go, there's a room for that. Not trickster. You know, it's a different thing. Shamans, not tricksters. You know, and each dynamic has its own shadow. You know, everybody, you know, shamanic this, shamanic that. There are great shamans, but the shadow that goes with that is an addiction to having an enemy. I am great, these dark forces are out to get me. And it's like, oh, stop, we don't have time. You know, let's throw that, you know, why would you be hiring that movie? You know, or cursing each other into oblivion. We don't have time for that. You know, so to throw everything into the cauldron going, and see the trickster model, you know, is about the fun of honesty with fundamental playful kindness, but how fun and spicy, dangerous in a good way, that is. You know, and we do. The royal we certainly, I mean, I can cross the line sometimes, you know, because otherwise how would you know where it was? You know, and go, oops. But again, that's why we want, you know, training the playful invitation. And also, see, we can't even be who we want to be by ourselves, which is really great. It's the power available to us now this weekend to write our manifesto of dedicated devotion, you know, even if it's just three sentences, and go, you know, this is how I want to be. Hold me to this, oh, invisible spirit of woof that animates the universe. So however we speak to the divine, hold me to this. Because then you've got a call and response. I mean, you really can feel it. You're setting up a real agreement. You know, I want to be this way. Hold me to it. And it gets very witty. Degree of difficulty gets ratcheted up, going, did pretty well that time. Try this. Whoa. I do like to cross the line. So I was giving a lecture once about, you know, maybe the whole Abrahamic tradition into the cauldron, right? Yeah. And Rabbi came up afterwards going, I've never been so insulted in all my life. And I go, but the evening is young, you know. Hold on. And then somebody else came up and said, you know, rah, 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 rah. And I go, well, okay, how about we join hands and jump into a cauldron together right now and go, if there's anything in either one of us which is not dedicated to the well-being of the whole, you know, may it be purged from us. And the person was like, cool. You know, I mean, they were up for it. I mean, they were very angry, like, ah, and then they're like, again, unexpected play, inviting in something better than our befoibled human selves. Really, really useful.
Chairman.
Yeah.
What is the astrological prospect for the next few years of the mystery?
Thank you. What story shall we vote for? Right, exactly. So first, you know, I do. I was wandering off, and I wanted to get. Thank you. So Barack Obama. That's why I was pondering this, because I've journeyed with him kind of mythologically for so long. If we expect from humans what can only be provided by gods, we will surely be disappointed. In fact, if we're willing to release. See, expectation is the partner of disappointment and serves colonialism, therefore. I knew it wouldn't be that good. Willingness, Uranus says, I'm going to connect you to everything. All I want from you is willing. Willingness is the dance partner of life. And you can feel it, you know, if we go to a party or whatever or a gathering, you know, expecting, we go, but if we go willing, you know, and that's a prison. If we go willing, you know, then we are liberating agents going, willing, what the hell? So with Obama, hey, Uranus is this part of why I was ardent about his second re-election in the face of, you know, progressives going, is immigration is terrible. And I go, yes, that is one true story. Jupiter says there's always 20, 30, 40 stories all going on at once, and they can all be conflicting, and they can all be true. And we want to know them all. You know, but which ones are we going to vote to animate? And I know there's a mythic being in him. When I first heard him speak, which was at the Democratic Convention when he was not even a senator yet, or maybe just a senator. Say what?
Yeah, he was just a senator.
Right. And I go, whew. And look up his chart, and you go, his Mars is 22 Virgo. When this country was born, its Neptune, its soul, is 22 Virgo. So I go, he's Marsing. He's animating the desirable vision for the country, which is what he did. That was one of his roles in the mystery play. Like, wow. To be elected president, you know, is a finite game of imprisonment, you know, and, you know, the Hafez line, the small man builds prisons for everyone he meets, but the wise woman ducks under the moon and tosses keys to the beautiful and rowdy prisoners. Well, I invite us to think of Barack Obama as a beautiful and rowdy prisoners, deserving keys, critique and blessing. And what is before him, the reason, again, the second election, people were like, no. Because trickster Uranus, nature's evolutionary ingenuity that goes around every 84 years, that's part of this whole big guiding meta story, will be stationing, looking like it's standing still, and going direct on December 21st, which is the winter solstice. And it's like, oh, it's so cool. Just like in the equinox behind us on September 21st was Pluto death rebirth stationing. Anytime a planet stations, it really wants our attention, going, whoa. And that was the enormous and incredibly powerful 400,000 people, you know, marching in New York, in which, you know, I was there with 400,000 other people. And it was this powerful snake of reverence. It's like, and it wasn't minimina. There was holding accountability, but it was not minimina. It was, Venus is strong. You know, and we're not string. You know, we're critiquing and composting, but it was very powerful. So we go at last. You know, it is part of my dedicated dream. Social action is cooperating with the Earth field. You know, the equinox and the thing, either consciously or not. We're all doing it. I mean, our word disaster means against the stars, disaster, and our word consider, con is with and sitters the stars. We don't need to know astrology. When we pause to consider, we get lined up. You know, to be in cahoots with the choreography of creation again, going, there we go. So, you know, dance us all into place where we can do the most good and have the most fun and be the most influential. That'll do. So this coming winter solstice is like, oh, that's really cool. It truly is. The winter solstice is the birth of the Redeemer. Uranus is favorite. You know, it's the trickster. So it truly is the birth of the trickster Redeemer. It will be happening stationing at 12 degrees of Aries. When Barack Obama was born, his sun, his basic central south, is 12 degrees Leo. So Uranus will exactly be trining it. So I invite us as an offering, as a woof woof wanna play, you know, to overcome like and go, this, I grew up in DC. My dad was a new dealer with FDR. When people go, well, what is that, you know, what's the DC California thing? And I go, well, it's a mystery. But I want to tell the progressive team that this is the most cultivated, reflected, you know, yes, befoibled president we're ever going to get. This is the best the gods could come up with. And to be churlish, the amount of churlishness, you know, really, the amount of vituperative hatred and contempt is, I mean, we wouldn't be able to stand it for like 5 minutes, that amount of venom coming right at you. It is churlish. You know, and so critique, and again, so he is connected to the U.S. soul, you know, but to expect from a human, but to invite in as an agent, so Keys. I know from experimenting in which, again, critique, and see, there's a lot of pressure right now on the XL pipeline, you know, the Dementors, you know, the Ardan, you know, war and pipelines and fracking, and he's playing a back channel. He's a deep player. I mean, he's a High John the Conqueror. He quoted High John the Conqueror in his speech on race. I go, he's read Zora Neale Hurston. He knows who High John the Conqueror is. This is deep. The guy is deep. In his speech on race, he said, we have to find a way out of no way. Well, that is High John the Conqueror's theme. High John the Conqueror, he hits a straight lick with a crooked stick and finds a way out of no way. And it was so cool. Obama was given, you know, he hit a straight lick with a crooked stick. He was given a crooked stick and he hit a straight lick with that. And it is as part of our collective dream. Not to fetishize, again, in community organizing and autonomy and, I mean, all of that. But in many ways to participate in the Obama part of all of us, because his name is magic. Barack Obama means bless the good. I mean, that's what it means. So every time even Fox News is going, they're still going, bless the good. You know, he could open up Cuba. He could do all kinds of things. But I know that when you know, in anti-XL pipeline stuff, and I'm always out there in the streets going, against this, but for this, there we go, and right, you know, no this, but yes, this thing, and it's just much more magnetizing. But every time I've gone with his chart, you know, and, you know, Monday Night Trickster Training Council, you know, may the ancestors, including his mother, you know, place a cloak of guiding earth wisdom around his shoulders and a council of wise wolves to guide and protect him. And every time I've done that, immediately, within 3 seconds, he steps out the door of the White House. You know, and then at the and I go, there's a mythic call and response going on here. And I ran into this woman who he gave most of his Nobel Peace Prize money, you know, to this child welfare advocacy group in Africa. And the woman said, The day we secretly, he didn't want anybody to know, you know, got the big check from him. Each one of us on the board, he came to us in a dream and hung out and got, you know, go. So I just bring that in as saying, you know, as part of us to encourage, support, protect, you know, in D.C., you know, I'm intricately intertwined with the story and life of Mary Meyer, who was JFK's only equal lover, who possibly took acid with him in the White House, but definitely smoked up grass. And it was after he did that he wrote this amazing speech that he delivered at American University in June of 1960. He's assassinated in 63. In June of 63, and it was maybe his death warrant. But it was this fantastic speech. It's an amazing speech. He calls upon compassion for the Russian people. And it's so good that Khrushchev has it broadcast throughout Russia. He says, we want a real peace, not enforced by war. It's an LSD dream, you know. And Mary Meyer, is his equal lover who is dedicated to peace, and it's powerful. But there is that kind of martyrdom. So it's a to and fro deal. It's a good time to create deals, but if this, then this, you know, we do want to kind of offer Obama a deal. If this, then may you be protected. You know, if we see connecting with the, because you are free of the finite game, we want to, you know, use, you know, previous war funds to rebuild Gaza. Go for it. You know, do something surprising and fabulous. Open up Cuba. He's thinking of that. That's in the works. You know, see the, you know, anyway. So So I just want to, I mean, is that good with everybody? Is everybody okay with that? Just as a, you know, ashe, may it be so, ashe, ashe. But so the political prospects, you know, yes, that, I mean, that's the immediate thing that grabs me, and it's sort of like inch by inch. The image for Barack Obama's moon is, you know, holly and mistletoe. You know, critique and blessing. This election is scary. You know, it's the Jupiter, because the people apparently in charge. But I'm also looking at the patterns. Like, what do we want to animate? The blessing. You know, American people wake up with buyer's remorse, going, "Oh my God, what have we done?" You know, may anything up to no good be revealed, rendered harmless, and an occasion for mirth. May it all come out. May it all come out. It's a really good way to go. And again, it wants to happen. So if it's just us humans, you know, that one of the balls I kind of threw up but didn't catch in the morning presentation was, because things are so complex, we can't do it by ourselves. And so the women, you know, Kurdish fighters in Katani, who, you know, fierce, and they, you know, it's complex, and they want the American bombing, even though they're hip to, you know, not American empire, and I mean, all kinds of we go. So may it be that we offer a mythological template, you know, may we see, because part of the women, I can't remember if I said this morning, but the what's called ISIS, but really Daesh fighters are freaked out because their mythology is if they're killed by a woman, they won't go to paradise. So the women, you know, are broadcasting, going, "We're women, we're going to call you," you know. And again, I love invoking simple things. You know, Eddie Izzard and Star Trek. Eddie Izzard said, "Star Trek, a very advanced civilization, but their phasers only had two settings, stun or kill." And he said, "We need many, many, many more phaser settings. You know, the left kettle on at home setting, I will kill it. Whoa, wait a minute. Or the sudden interest in botany setting, I will kill you." Let's see the Katani women with phasers, with many settings. Sudden interest in botany. You learn weaving. You go home to your wife and cook. You know, fierce blessing. You know, as animated play. Wolf, wolf, wanna play. And from wolves, you know, my friends who know far more about wolves, but they go, he says, even though they are hunted by cruel humans, even though they must find things to eat, they play every 30 minutes. Woof, woof. You know, and so we want to as well, you know, woof, woof, play. And ally etiquette. So many, I mean, I work with Pacifica Radio, right? You know, I mean, so many good-hearted people in all these melodramas. See, Jupiter in Leo says, you know, create theater or live melodrama, take your pick. And we go, let's throw melodrama, you know, the petty intrigue of melodrama into the cauldron to ladle out the grand intrigue of the participation in the transformation of culture. You know, so many groups, you know, again, you know, I think ally etiquette is really important. Again, is our manner of relating, offering, or imposition. And then playful ways of addressing that. Does anybody, so the political future, what would you like it to be? What's your whimsical blessing?
My blessing is that we may each understand in a profound way the mystery of what we're achieving. So rather than a blessing for a concrete outcome,
no.
My blessing is that understand and dance in the
Yes. And when you say the word dance, I can see us dancing, because there's a tangible incarnational verb. And periodically, you know, taking off the masks and going, "Oh, convincing performance as a tyrant, fantastic," and then putting the mask back on. You know, twinkling, you know, ally, which we love. There was this great psychological study, because it was surprising. It said, to the degree to which people are ironic is the degree to which they have the capacity for compassion. And it's surprising because we think of irony as a British bitter thing, like, But to be ironic, you have to be holding at least two stories at once. Usually what is and what should be, or what is and what people are pretending it is, you know. And the energy, see, lives in the discrepancy. And see, that's where the trickster part of us is happy to go into that, because the energy of the like, wait a minute, and disrupt it and go, hoo-ha. And to be compassionate is to be able to hold an ever-expanding larger number of stories simultaneously. So I love irony to compassion. And see, I love cultures of irony. The Middle East, Bedouins, people who've seen a lot. You know, the spiritual teachers of this culture, you know, for a long time in the mystery play also, you know, Black Pullman porters, some of us smoking up as teenagers in one of the rooms, and the Black Pullman porter going, cut that out or cut me in. We go, excellent. Or the Jupiter wise guy disguised as Skycap, in which people with a bazillion pounds of luggage, you know, ahead of me, and they left without tipping, and I see his eye, and he goes, I mean, you know, he goes, we don't even, he goes, I know what you're thinking, but I had this wise mentor who said, it's an expensive city, some people are rude, some people can't afford it, go take a smoke break, you know, and at the end of the day, it all sorts itself out. I'm like, oh, that's very good, thank you. Very wise, very wonderful. Yeah, he had his own built-in herumphitude composter. So so the blessings abound, but just to for us to play and consider to wonder each to ourselves, you know, what stories are we willing to leave behind now? Because see, everybody's got their stories they love to tell, and some of them are victim stories. And we go, have they served their purpose? You know, so somebody also recently was like, you know, slightly courting me and going, have you ever had a life-changing soul experience? And I go, I think you're asking me that because you've had one that you'd like to tell me. Yes, that's exactly it. I go, it's like Martine Prechtel also says about, you know, bringing courtship between Venus and Mars and romance back would be good and healing of the earth. And he said, you know, when he came back to this country after 25 years in Guatemala, he said two things. He said he'd forgotten that Americans know nothing about grieving, and for lack of grief, we go to war. And then he also said he'd forgotten that Americans know nothing about courtship. And he said, what passes for courtship is a man saying to a woman, look, I made a golden statue of myself for you. You know, anyway, so I go, oh, yeah, bringing courtship back in. So back to Jupiter. Jupiter says, to each one of us now, you know, I will make you wealthy by your own definition of wealth, which is not limited to money. You know, and it says, you know, what do we want to feel like, and what do we want to feel like to others? And it can be anything. We just want to know. I mean, we might want to feel daunting sometimes, but we want to, maybe we want to feel inspired, inspiring, or enthused, enthusing, or appreciated, appreciating, or, you know, any of those things. But these are worthy wonderings, especially now during our gathering. Because again, Jupiter says, you place the order, we'll fill it. You know, our whole life is art. You know, what artful being. And it might be the one thing as a species that distinguishes us, aside from our rudeness, is our capacity to borrow qualities of intelligence from plants and animals. So we get to kind of weave our customized mythological trickster selves. You know, customized for each person. You know, the quality you admire in nature. You know, chamomile, the more you step on it, the better it grows. You know, that's a good mascot for some. You know, I mean, or you know, everything and the quality of medicine of that, you know. So to kind of customize and weave our, so that when we are in hot situations, we have a responsive repertoire to draw upon. So we're not, again, so we're agents of cool rather than hot, reactive, and prisoners kind of thing. So, yes, who else wants to? I thought it was going to be a council. I've done all the talking. Does anybody else want to bring up a conundrum or a quandary or a blessing or a...
Some...
Okay, well, that's very kind of you, but we can also, I do want to do the magic. Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about Saturn moving around Scorpio? Relevant to the next where we are?
Yes, that's a good point. You know, Saturn is the part of us that keeps the beat. You know, it's in an individual chart. We all have them. It's our birth chart. It's a real map and a symbolic map of our navigational instructions, but also the interior democracy of each one of us. So we all have a Saturn. We want to insource what we've been outsourcing. So Saturn is our authority. It's how we define things. Part of our lifelong task is, you know, to give each part of our psyche the work it does best. And I think that Saturn, in a way, is the least understood. Saturn is a part of us that's really good at defining things, intending things, taking vows. And Saturn would say to us now, you know, we don't have to make any decisions, we want to make some intentions, which is more fun and more interesting. So Saturn's really good at, you know, defining, dedicating, you know, vows. It's really terrible at how, but we always stick it with how. You know, all right, I want to do this. How do I do it? Oh, depression. Jupiter and Uranus chime in and say, we are the parts of your psyche that will do the booking. Saturn does the defining, you know, and again, you know, an all-encompassing metaphor for all of us to see. Neptune says to everybody, you know, we're all at sea. Whoa. But we have a boat. And that's kind of our Saturn thing. We have a boat, and on the boat there's a tiller. It's a Saturn thing. And that's our heart's desire. It steers this boat. And I think we'll go Saturn into Jupiter's realm, you know, syncretize, you know, and there's bad ways it could go, but we want to honor that and go good ways. That's right. Keep forgetting to say things. So we're at sea, but we have a boat, and on the boat there's a tiller. It's our heart's desire. The winds are coming, so they just want us to put up the sail. The big sail is the Uranus, we are willing, you know, sail. The Jupiter sail is a 12-year sail, and it says whatever you wanted to do 12 years ago, it wasn't time. Culture wasn't ready, we weren't ready, now culture's ready, we're ready. So Jupiter says in moments of reflection, which we have available to us here, to wonder, like, well, where was I 12 years ago? You know, in 2002, 2003, and how did I get to here? And just whatever comes up, because, and again, no category about success, fail, all useful. Because it says we have magnetizing, all-encompassing opportunities that will draw upon everything that we've done these last 12 years. And then Jupiter says, I'm going to make everything bigger. Whatever you don't want bigger, throw it overboard before we set sail. So we might say, I mean, and feel free to chime in on this one, you know, how about all known and unknown forms of self-sabotage? Wouldn't that be good to, we've gotten all the good out of that, right? Non-useful dread, you know, would be good. Anything else that, you know, anybody wants to, that we've gotten all the good out of? Certainly, Uranus always says, better a trickster than a martyr. This is part of ally etiquette. We can't afford tragic romantic, fashionable once, but you know we don't have time now. The model, the difference is that martyrdom really is still complicit with colonialism in some sneaky way, because the martyr part of us and the trickster part of us, same impulse, takes on the unconscious material of the family or the culture. Martyr goes, I take it on, it is just me, I take it on, and now I'm ill and dead and oppressed. Blah, blah, blah. Trickster takes it on, but then invites in what can metabolize the poison. Does not presume to be, you know. And see, I think part of the sneaky part of colonialism is it inflates isolation. I the genius, or I the martyr, or I the, and so I'm willing to go. You know, martyrdom, you know, is colonial, is complicit with colonialism, just for the provocative fun of it, You know, and so let's compost impulse towards martyrdom. It's like Brecht in his essay, Five Obstacles to Telling the Truth, that I want to turn into Five Opportunities for Telling the Truth. But he says the main problem of good people is they say, we are good people, we come up against evil, evil crushes us, and we are noble, And he goes, we got to quit telling that story about how the good is weak. You know, as water is wet, the good is weak. We want to start telling the story about how the good is strong. And that's where I do want to wrap in the, you know, democratic animism part, which is this, the innocent dignity of our child heart is so delighted when we realize it's not just us alone. You know, the examples I always use, but I love them so much, and there are more, and let's add to them. You know, last summer, Chevron, you know, put up its drill rig a year ago, summer, in the Arctic, and many people watching, and clear horizons, clear, you know, ocean, clear water, and on the horizon comes this giant iceberg, dum 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 dum, and heads right for the Chevron oil rig, and Chevron goes, gotta skedaddle, and then, you know, the tugboat that came to tow it broke down, and the tugboat broke down, and then it was boarded by EPA, then cited them for all kinds of violations. We go, go North Atlantic Intelligence, even without humans inviting it. You know, I love that, you know, in Diablo Canyon and in Scotland, you know, jellyfish clogged and shut down nuclear reactors. We go, go jellyfish. You know, jellyfish proliferating in global heating. So I love the justice, the symmetry, the beauty, the wit of jellyfish going to shut down the thing that is giving rise to them. We go, oh, that's very witty. Poison ivy doing well. Let's invite it to surround bad projects. Pele, the goddess of the volcano, and, you know, all Hawaiian people that I know of any effect, you know, invite Pele to work with them. Gods need to be invited. It seems to be one of the rules of the planet. And we invite it by ritual and prayer and dedication. And then just many examples of, you know, cooperating with nature in an ingenious way. I mentioned this at the Bioneers talk, and I love it so. The Uwa people, I just ran into this woman who'd been working with the Uwa people in Colombia, and I go, this story I tell all the time, it's really true, right? She goes, yes, yes, yes. She goes, but there's even more to it. So the story that I told all the time that she told me years ago was Occidental had moved into the Uwa lands and was going to destroy them, and the Uwa were despairing and were going to kill themselves rather than see their lands destroyed. But then they were like, wait a minute, we remember our ancestors knew about this collaborative nature magic. And they went into ceremony and they invited the oil to hide. And Occidental came and did three drills that came up dry, packed up, and left. And we go, yes, that quality, that thing is so satisfying and so heartening. You know, again, if we just thought it was us, but we're voting, you know, it is important what humans do, but the forging the alliances, important. So I love that part. And the value of the metaphor of being at sea with a boat and a tiller, hand on tiller, big sail up, small Jupiter sail up, 12-year story, different gifts, you know, the stories we want to take along with us, you know, is that we don't have to create the ocean, the boat, the tiller, or the wind. We want to each see ourselves, you know, hand on tiller, hair in wind, seeing everybody else in their boat, you know, we're, you know, on a rising tide of sane reverence, you know, moving in with the wrathful Dakinis, surfing in with Kuan Yin on her wave, you know, with all, you know, wise wolves, you know, that kind of quality of animation going, spiral that out into group mind, you know, that quality of the irresistible invitation as a desirable. So because see to the martyr part of us, they go, this is so much a better image. I was steering the boat by putting its rope between my teeth and diving overboard and swimming through the waves, hauling the boat behind me. This is more elegant. We can be on the boat with a cup of tea. So the last thing I want to sort of proffer, you know, before we close and maybe and wish each other well is, you know, Jupiter also says is the art of storytelling. And in service to Venus, Venus forms a five-petaled orbital design over 8 years. So in correspondence, you know, all five-petaled plants, sacred to Venus, this tracking of, we are pattern-tracking beings. It's beautiful, the corresponding. So also is the five-act storytelling structure sacred to Venus, intrinsic to nature. And a friend of mine who's a playwright, you know, taught me this long ago, and she said, for effective storytelling in Hollywood and elsewhere, Americans don't know much about this. She said basically, Act One is, so because a five-act structure is comedy, not ha-ha, but redemption, and a four-act structure is tragedy. So basically, Act One is away, Act One is context, here we are. Act Two is away. Act Three is oops. Act Four is evil. Act Five is the wedding, the kiss, the redemption, the sending forth of the mass, go forth and do good things. And she says, either, you know, we have oppression plays that end with Act Four, life sucks, you know, and she goes, come back here, you know, and write Act Five. You know, or Hollywood will skip Act Four and tack on a happy ending, which has no power. We got to go through the whole cycle. So we're in Act Four, Act Five, or, you know, but curtain can come down every now and then as we imagine it and go back, you know, into major story rewrite. And the last, you know, practical example, again, that I use a lot, but many of you have never heard me before, but I love it. So I was talking to an ally at the UN who was in charge of all refugee camps. This was some years ago. Maybe it was 6 years ago. And at that time, all refugee camps are in use. It's a world of refugees, animals, plants, humans, everything. So he told me about the scariest moment in his life when I think he was in Zaire. And the week before, UN colleagues had been kidnapped and murdered and left by the side of the road. And they were walking down this road, he with his UN colleagues, and they were kidnapped. They were stuffed into the back of this truck. And guys with AK-47s and bloodshot eyes were, and they really thought they were going to die. But he said to his fellows, we've got to change the story. We're not being kidnapped. We're being helped. So they began to thank their captors. Whoa, man, thank you so much for keeping us safe in this complex situation. Whoa. And their captors were puzzled. You know, a surprising, you know, there's a, you know. And that night when they locked them up, the captors said, we're putting a guard outside so you'll be safe. And 3 days later, let them go. We've got to change the story. You know, and it's a capacity to go backstage at any point when something, you know, is like, we go, wait a minute, story rewrite. You're not being a dingbat. Now you're being a helpful person. I'm not a victim. Now I'm a grateful whatever. You know, all right, back on stage. It only takes about 2 seconds. But it's something to really play with. When we don't like the story, going, story rewrite. But it means liberating the other person too, right? They're no longer a criminal, you know, or a murderer. Now you're a helpful person. You're inviting a whole different part of everybody to play, and because it's unexpected, you know, and that's also when you started, you know, Coyote loves unexpected. Coyotes love uneven footing, seesaws, and growing up with Stella and then, you know, communing with coyotes every now and then. If you're unexpected, hello, you know, they're like, what's up? They love curiosity. They do have a very much kill the weak, you know. They're not sentimental, you know. So if you go, they go, it's going to be fun to bite your ankles. But if you just, you know, kind of, you know, and yeah.
Well, it just makes me think what you're saying about when I was flying here, I actually sat next to someone who was like a top level manager for Chevron. And
perfect.
I know.
It's perfect.
Yeah, and
it's just, your ministry.
Yeah, you know, we were just chatting, and everything seemed to be going along. Like there was a lot of commonality, and I'm just talking to him and asking him questions, and then at one point he was asking about like what's happening in this country, what's wrong, and we started going, you know. And so I gave him some thoughts, and he just went off into this story that wasn't even. I was like, what did I say that actually made you think that I said what you think? Because sometimes I start hearing the rhetoric, you know, of like, people have to pull themselves up by the bootstraps, and people, if they're not working hard enough, well, they shouldn't be able to get, you know, redistribution of the wealth, and that's what people want, and I'm just like, what did I say that made you
go that way?
This is where I'm going. And he couldn't, like, detach for a moment to think about it, and then afterwards he was like, I guess you didn't say that. I said, are you having another conversation? And he's like, oh, yeah, I guess this is an old conversation. you know?
Wow.
And so we you know, we just kept going, and then we calmed down. After a while, we just kind of, like, separated. And then he reached in his backpack, and he pulled out a book, which is this, The Fourfold Path, from someone that wrote the book, Nourishing Wisdom. And he goes, I'm reading this. And, you know, and he's like, there's a lot that I need to let go of. I'm working on it. And it was just the sweetest thing.
You did brilliant, Trickster Sister. Yeah, no, that's so great. Exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah, that's really great. No, this, you know, and again, see, by our dedication, then may everything be a ministry, an opportunity for blessing, right? Because you didn't go grr. You know, and I did use all my frequent flyer miles to upgrade to talk to warmongers.
Mm.
And in just the way it got, you know, first guy with Cisco Systems. And I got to say, when did you get all the contracts in Iraq? And they were like, October, you know, October 2000. I'm like, bastards, God. But by the end of the journey, he was quitting Cisco Systems and opening a B&B. You know, and then I got a next person, military intelligence person, you know, teaching at Berkeley, who was just surprised that I didn't hate him. Because he's like, you work for Pacifica Radio and you don't hate me? And I go, no. And he goes, it's so amazing. Exactly. You know, and then the next person was Northrop Grumman, okay, the Chevron, because that would have gotten my goat. I mean, you're, you know, and sometimes with people I go, I'm just drawing the curtain, we've been getting on so well, we're not going to go on, you know, but with the Northrop Grumman guy, it's like your guy, because at first I was Guri, and I had to compost her own fatigue. Because he's like, why? You know, and I go, you know, I'm wondering, how do we create an economy based on peace rather than on war? And he took this big sigh, like your guy, and he said, I wonder that too. And I know it's not from the top, because I'm at the top. But then he said, but what really moves me, he said, and then he said, you know, you've probably never heard of it, is what really moves me is the Heifer Project. And I go, I have. Do you know what it's right, where you buy a goat for villagers. One of the top heads of Northrop Grumman, what really moves him is he wants to give a goat to a village. And we go, wazza, you little King Shahryar sociopath. You know, wazza, roll you over like a dog, find your little sweet spot. You go, there we go. You know, invite that. Anyway, but that's brilliant. Yeah, so, because Neptune's, there's images for each degree of the zodiac, and Neptune's image is a warm-hearted church social. You know, so it's like your ministry, and as one of the frames, viewing everything as an opportunity to bless, which you did. That's wonderful.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. That just makes the world more wonderful. Well, let's just, before we, okay, we deconvene now, that's right, we've gone so long, but reciprocal blessing, you know, to everyone, you know, in their heart now, to hold the desire. There's just two more people I want to introduce, and I'll keep it really short. Part of the adorableness of now, there are images for each degree of the zodiac. So, old tradition. But the image for Mercury is men toiling in a dark pit. A woman calmly lowers a rope, going, "Hello, you boys down there. You can." You know. So when you say about the electoral future, I go, let's just imagine all of us, regardless of gender, as the woman lowering a rope, going, "You boys, you want to keep wrangling? Or here's a rope out." Venus right now, which makes it even spicier right now, Venus is at 19 Scorpio, which the medieval astrologers called the accursed degree of the accursed sign, because its image is a woman draws back two dark curtains leading to a sacred pathway. And, you know, the men astrologers were like, but it's like, here she is right now, in the underworld, gathering her mojo, and we with her. So, for all of us, just even in a wondering way, to hold some tangible desire, like what would each person, you don't have to say it at all, in fact it's better to not, but to hold it in your heart, what is a tangible desire to, you know, be, have, do, that would make life more beautiful in contributing gifts to world, just for all of us to hold that, because we want to invite that in and reciprocally bless. There are ways in which we can gather and which really do, you know, strengthen each other. And then, you know, the wonderful Yoruba word ashe, which means may that, you know, from backstage to onstage, may it incarnate. So maybe does everybody have, you know, some approximate sense of a desire that they'd like blessed? So maybe just on the count of three, we would just say Ashe. One, two, three. Ashe. May it go well for all of us. Thank you. Thank you, team.